This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where over the past week across the EFL's three divisions, we have had managerial changes galore. Darren Moore swapped promotion chasing with Skybet League One Doncaster Rovers for Skybet Championship strugglers Sheffield Wednesday. Also in League One, Ipswich Town traded in one Paul Lambert for another Cook. And in Skybet League Two, Leighton Orient replaced Ross Embleton with sometime official EFL podcast pundit Joby Makanoff, as if he hasn't got enough grey hairs already. It's the official EFL podcast. There were a few eyebrows raised when he took over at Sinsel Bank just after the most successful period in the club's history, but 18 months on and after two-thirds of the season in which Lincoln City have rarely left the Skybet League One automatic promotion places, it just goes to show that Michael Appleton's judgment is far better than that of the rest of us. Although, as we speak to you, Appy, you have just lost two in a row. But, obviously, a game like last weekend, where you go 2-0 down, then end up going 3-2 up, then lose 4-3. From the point of view of neutral, it's like, wow, what is going on here? What's it like to be embedded in the centre of it, to have your emotions dragged in so many directions in such a relatively short space of time, Michael?
Yeah, listen, it's difficult. You know, we're all human and we all deal with things differently. You know, part and parcel of the job is to be able to deal with setbacks, and part and parcel of the job is to pick people up when you have those setbacks and people are feeling a little bit low. And, you know, motivation is one of the skills that you need to be a decent manager and coach. And I think over the next 48 hours before we play Crewe on Saturday, you know, you got to find a way of motivating the players and getting them in a frame of mind that is capable of winning a game against a side that, if you don't turn up on the day and they turn up, we all know what Crewe are capable of. They're a fantastic football side, and if you're not aggressive with them and you don't compete with them, it'll be a difficult afternoon. And it's going to be a challenge for the players, Clem, because we've got a very, very young group, as you know. And I've got no apologies for saying this, our three biggest influencers in terms of players in the squad and players that are probably one of the first few names on the team sheet, unfortunately at this moment in time, are injured and unavailable, in sort of, you know, Joe Walshley and Brick Cutton and George Grant. And that's not only me captain, me vice captain out of the team, it's me captain, me vice captain and vice captain out of the team. It's a big blow, but you know, this is what you're in it for, to be tested. And some of these young players that we've got in the group at the minute, over the next 4 or 5 games, whether it ends up going well or not, it'll be a great experience for them.
You either sound a little bit down, or this is a fair reflection of the fact it's been your day off today, and you've spent it with your delightful 5-month-old, is Ned now?
he's nearly 6 months. He's like 5.5 months. I'm a little bit tired, to say the least, because my wife sort of uses Wednesdays to, you know, get a full day working. So I just call it daddy daycare, you know, and... yeah, so it's a little bit full on.
When he's having a little bit of a squawk and stuff, what's your method? Are you a kind of chuk in the ear merchant, or are you a sort of jiggler up and down, or are you in the push chair and rocking backwards and forwards? What's your baby quietening technique?
Yeah, I'm a little bit of everything, if I'm being honest. I think variety, you know, especially when they're at a place where they can't really interact with you or tell you what's wrong or whether they're bored or not. I think the more sort of toys and play stuff you can have around and music going on and sounds, I think, the more the merrier from my point of view.
In those moments of kind of stepping away from football, do football answers suddenly come to you? The very fact that you're intently concentrating on something that's got nothing to do with your job suddenly brings you a kind of light bulb moment on a challenge?
It can do, definitely. And what I would say is that, you know, I think there's a lot of things that I do find difficult to switch. Well, there's not much I can find that helps me switch off away from the game. And I think most managers would probably agree with me on that. But, you know, looking after Ned, he's one of them where he does need your full focus, because obviously he's so young and you can't keep your, you know, can't take your eyes off him. But yeah, I mean, at the back of the mind, there's always especially after the defeat last night, it's difficult not to think about that and not to think about, you know, tomorrow and what we're going to do with the players and how we're going to do it. But at the same time, he does enable me to, you know, have that, you know, few minutes where I can actually just really, really enjoy him and what he's about, and, you know, him getting excited and laughing and smiling and all them things. He can bring a bit of a smile to my face and put things into perspective for me.
Yeah. In a change to our normal broadcast, you're listening to Mum's Net with Michael Appleton's baby care tips. There will be a fact sheet on this. If you do want it, please do write in.
Well, if I lose a few more games, I might need another business.
Oh, blimey. Well, I tell you what, I mean, you've impressed me already, so I dare say you'll impress parents up and down the land with some of your techniques there. And all that. Back to where we started and how I introduced you. What's your criteria for assessing whether a club has peaked yet or whether there is still some stretch left in them?
I think first and foremost, you know, you want the message to be really, really clear from the board and the people who own the football club. And even though obviously Lincoln had a lot of success in terms of the two promotions, you know, over the 3 years with Danny and Nick, I think there was a clear indication from them when I spoke to them first that they wanted to change the way things were done. They felt that the budget was very high and competitive for both the Conference and League Two. But the reality is going into League One, you know, we were absolutely no chance we're going to be able to compete with some of the clubs that are in League One from a financial point of view. So they felt that they had to find a different way when Danny and Nick left to go to Huddersfield. So they seen the next sort of appointment as important as probably what I did in terms of me having to make sure I choose the right option for myself going forward. And I was really impressed because they wanted to do something similar to what I did at Oxford, and they knew everything about what I did at Oxford. Clive, the chairman, he's a real stat man, so he knew everything about me. They'd done the due diligence to the absolute T. And very, very quickly become clear that, you know, they wanted to work on a return on investment plan in terms of bringing players in at a young age from the short term to medium term, try and get success with Lincoln. But the reality, knowing that at some point we're going to lose them. And in doing that, obviously, we had to change a few mindsets, because I think in the earlier part of me coming in, there was a few passes that went square and backwards, and there's a few boos and groans and get it forward and, you know, what you're doing, don't know what you're doing. And you just got to stay sort of patient and true to yourself and, you know that eventually it will change. And it was no different to Oxford in my first 6 months. You know, I was getting a bit of stick for trying to play a certain way. But I knew eventually, you know, as soon as the players gained a little bit of confidence, picked up one or two results, we'd start seeing the rewards for it.
Don't you need guarantees or at least an open dialogue with the board as well to say, obviously this does carry that period where a base has to be laid, and if people are expecting just a continuation of results, you won't necessarily get it through a period of intensive reorganisation and reset?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's important sometimes as well to be quite honest and straightforward. You know, I'm a big believer that I know you've got to be guarded sometimes in terms of what information you can give to the public, to the community, to your fans. But I like to try and be as honest as I possibly can. And even if it upsets them to a degree from a very, very short period of time, you know, so one of the big things, certainly from my point of view when it came in, is that, you know, expectations in previous seasons have been to finish quite high in the league and try and get promoted. And from a financial point of view, that could be backed up. Whereas obviously in League One, it was the first time the club had been in League One for 21 years. You know, they've been scratching around in the Conference and obviously League Two at different stages. And, you know, this was a big step up for the football club. And for me, it was making sure that the fans knew straight away, look, you know, staying in this division is the single most important thing, because we want to have a platform to be able to build on. I think one of the sort of big risks that we did take was in January last year, where we recognised that there was an opportunity to bring in three or four young players, a couple of loan players and a couple of permanent players that we felt would almost use them as a catalyst to try and speed things up a little bit and move us forward a little bit quicker. And we did that, and for the first sort of month or so, January, early part of February, the results were a little bit tricky, but the performances were okay and getting better and better. And, you know, actually just before the sort of pandemic happened, you know, the performances and the results were pretty good. So we were certainly going in the right direction. But what that did was, when it came to sort of this season, the start of the season, regardless of obviously the difficulties with COVID, we had some really good young players in the building already, and it was about adding to them to try and put the squad together that we had done.
And you used the first lockdown extremely constructively as well, because while a lot of us were wondering what the heck was happening, how it affected us, or just using those moments to sort of sit back a wee bit, I think you were quite proactive with Zoom meetings and tracking down signings and just making sure you maximised return on your downtime during that enormous period of uncertainty.
Yeah, absolutely. We spent a lot of time on Zoom calls with players, agents, and obviously big Premier League clubs as well, you know, trying to convince them that, you know, when football does restart, that, you know, some of their young players would benefit by coming to Lincoln City and be part of their development going forward. And, you know, I think the success I had at Oxford with a lot of young players from bigger clubs in the Championship and Premier League certainly helped that. But there was a certain, probably three or four players who we brought in the summer who, if we're being honest, if it got to a point where, you know, it would have been, I don't know, sort of late June, early July, and we'd had to wait before maybe offering them a contract or get into a position where we could offer them a contract, there's no chance we would have got them. I think the board at that point were very good. They recognised that, you know, we had 12 players, I think it was, out of contract, and, you know, we had to release those players, which was difficult, but the right thing for the club. And it was almost convincing the board that, look, you know, we might have to have an agreement in place here, because we can make an offer to a player and an agent who, under the climate, they don't really know, you know, what it's going to look like beyond COVID and, you know, what the following season looks like. So, again, we got in there early. We did the work. We convinced them that Lincoln was the right place for them. And we did it in a framework in terms of the finances that worked for us as well.
Where are you at personally? Because I love looking back over your career, and you've not been afraid to sort of switch roles and levels over the time. Yeah. You know, people will be intrigued of having got your promotion with Oxford, then you then took the assistant role at Leicester. Where do you feel you are on your own personal journey?
I mean, it's one of them, Clem, where, listen, we've all got egos no matter what we do and, you know, what role we're playing, what business it is, whether it's, you know, media, business, football, sport, in any way. But I'm not the type who has an ego to suggest that, you know, I'm a manager, an out-and-out manager, and I can't do any of the roles. And I think I'm reasonably adaptable. I think one of my biggest strengths is my coaching. You know, I do believe that I could coach at any level in the world in terms of players, you know, leagues, etc. I feel really, really comfortable on the grass, and I'd back myself on the grass, you know, with anybody. Obviously, there's so many different facets to being a manager. It's not just being out on the grass. So I'm learning all the time. I still consider myself as being a young manager who's got lots to learn. Having said that, you know, I do like the business side of football. I took my master's. I was on the first cohort of the master's group that do the MSD.
This is the sporting directors. Now, that's interesting. Has that changed your perspective on management then, having that kind of insight you can bring to the table?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, one of the reasons I first did it was to sort of get a better insight of the business side of it. And not only that, try and help me manage upwards a little bit better and build that communication and relationships with my board and my chairman and my chief execs. And it gave me it was a bit of an eye-opener. I mean, the actual doing the work was difficult enough as it is, but my wife Jess, she taught me techniques of how to read and look for certain things and pick up certain things, because, you know, she had that type of background, and it really helped in the early days because there was a little bit of fish out of water. But I like challenging myself and I really enjoyed the course because I did learn so much from it. And listen, that will be a role that I do at some point. I've got absolutely no doubts about that because, you know, I think I've got the skill set to do it. But at this moment in time, I'm enjoying being the manager, and I'm enjoying being the manager of Lincoln City. And, you know, if I'm a manager for the next 10 years, great. If I'm not, and I have to go and be an assistant manager or an under 23s coach at, you know, Premier League level, whatever it may be, I'm more than happy doing that. You know, and as long as I'm happy, family's happy, and we're comfortable, like I say, I feel I've got the sort of the skill sets to do various roles.
This is a departure from the norm, if I may say, because a lot of I think managers get very close to the coal face and want to stay there, don't they? But the fact you're quite happy to move around and have that sort of spread of education and different desires, I think cuts you apart from the pack. But as you said, there's only so many jobs to go around as well, isn't there? So it's good to have that adaptability and that flexibility.
It is, and I just think it improves you as a person. You know, it's one of them where I'm quite comfortable with people, and I certainly, you know, I'm comfortable whether it's in the boardroom or whether it's in the, you know, the meeting room in terms of, you know, analysis or meetings with players or whatever it may be, even like the academies, etc. And, you know, I think I've said it before, Clement, and might have been, you know, when we've spoken in the past, I think a lot of people look at me and they have a certain perception of me. And to be fair, I use it to my advantage quite a lot because they probably look at the tattoos, etc., and think, oh yeah, he must be thick. But I actually use that to my advantage. And
how do you use it to your advantage?
Well, it's clear when I meet someone, I can tell pretty early, you know, they've made an opinion of me, and the reality is that, you know, I know they've got that opinion wrong, and you know, I like to think I'm a little bit more clever than what they think I am. And it's happened on so many sort of courses I've been on and doing various things, situations where I can see that, you know, they're sort of looking down at me a little bit as if to say, oh, you know, who's this bug, you know, or, you know, who's he think he is, type thing. And like I say, I'm very humble, respectful, and at the same time, I know when to keep my mouth shut, I know when to listen. You know, what's the phrase that you use? The quietest man in the room is normally the smartest man in the room. And like I say, I know when to speak.
And you've got that gentle side, as you've already demonstrated on the Official EFL podcast, with chuckling Ned under the chin. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, our thoughts are with Shrewsbury Town's manager Steve Cotterill, has been readmitted to hospital with COVID pneumonia. He'd only recently come out after his previous 33-day spell. Burn Albion's remarkable transformation under Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank continued with a fifth win in six, taking them out of the bottom four. And there was a first win in 12 league games and of 2021 for Northampton Town. Your fixtures this coming weekend: Paul Cook's first game in charge of Ipswich is at Gillingham in the 1 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. It is Burton against the leaders, Peterborough in the 3 o'clock, Doncaster against Plymouth, Hull against Bristol Rovers, Portsmouth travel to Northampton, and Sunderland are at home to Rochdale. Those last two are obviously relegation fighters against promotion chasers, and Michael's Lincoln City are up against Crewe. I've got to just mention, on the day we're recording this, it's the anniversary of the big man's death. Keith Alexander passed away 11 years ago today. I mention this because his imprint was kind of all over Lincoln City for a period. I don't know whether you feel that connection with the past four consecutive seasons he took the club to the League Two playoffs.
No, I mean, obviously he's very, very highly thought of at the football club, and, you know, he gets mentioned a hell of a lot still, and there's lots of memories of him, you know, in around the stadium. And you know, he played a big part in what you just said, Len, the history of the club.
Yeah. I guess the key now is just foot down, push them as hard as you can. Well, whatever you've got to deal with resources-wise and the injuries that you're currently juggling and all the rest of it, you've set yourselves up rather nicely. And for all you've lost the last two, sorry, I promised I wouldn't mention that again, but I had to set this question up. You know, you've got a couple of games in hand on the team just above you at the moment and things. So I think you might have taken this at the start of the season, would you not?
Absolutely, Clem. Yeah, I would have snapped your hands off. You know, the target at the start of the season was to finish in the top 12 in the top half of the division. So we've given ourselves a great, great opportunity. And, yeah, we're going to have a right go at it.
Thanks for a really wonderfully revelatory chat, Michael. Wish you well for the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Cheers, pal. Take care, mate.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
It was the end of an era at Spotland last summer, but another chapter in the remarkable goal-scoring career of Ian Henderson when, after averaging over 15 league goals a campaign over his 7 full seasons with Rochdale, he departed for ambitious Sky Bet League 2 Salford City. Although I can see you as we do this interview, Ian, and I can look just over your left shoulder and what is hanging on the wall but a Rochdale shirt. So old habits die hard, or you haven't got a good electric screwdriver in the house.
What an introduction, Mark. Thank you ever so much for that. Yes, you can see a Rochdale shirt in the background hanging there nicely. And it deserves to be there. I spent 7.5 wonderful years at the football club and made some incredible friends there and had some magical moments too. So out of respect for all of the people that brought me to the football club and allowed me to stay there for such a long period of time in football, that hangs there proudly.
Yeah, it was a real, when I heard about the move, it was a real, it was like, I just, all those seasons of banging those goals in, it felt like you were part of the furniture there in a complimentary way. And I'd like to point out with that question.
Maybe circumstances, what the whole world's gone through. And, I don't say that lightly either. Lots of businesses, organisations have struggled through this whole COVID situation. And I'm pretty sure a lot of football clubs have as well. So they've had to adjust accordingly and stay flexible. So, it is what it is. Ships in the night, I call it. People come and go so fast in football.
How did the association come about? Because obviously it's played a hugely significant part in your life. But how did the move to Rochdale come about? And what did you know about them at the time? And what was in your head in terms of what you thought might happen?
Really, really good question. I literally just relocated to Manchester after leaving Colchester United, where I spent 3.5 wonderful years there as well. And I'd moved up to Manchester and I got a call off of former colleague Michael Rose, who I was with at Colchester, and he had just signed for Rochdale, and Keith Hill invited me in just to train to start off with, but I could remember always scoring against Rochdale and doing well against them, Keith's side. So he invited me in, and within a few days he'd kind of maybe seen what he wanted to see and offered me a very short-term contract until the end of that season. And he seemed to have took a liking to me. So we kind of hit it off from day one. And as they say, the rest is history. We went on to, obviously, the next season get promotion. And we built a fantastic player-manager relationship. But it was a bit more than just a player-manager relationship. He was, I've said it before in the past, he was and still is one of my mentors. And I'm hugely appreciative of everything that he's done and kind of the advice and help that he's given me through the latter stages of my career.
Do some managers, some people just have that kind of defatigable ability to lift you, to get you? You just, there's perfect synergy, everything slots together and something magical just happens.
Yeah, I probably waited until I went to Rochdale to find that synergy, and I think that's a great word to put alongside it. And we got each other, we understood each other, and we got the best out of each other. And for that, I am eternally grateful, because it's helped me really fulfill early potential I had in my football career to score goals, to actually go on to do it.
I just love the whole notion of footballers and where they end up, because you're an archetypal southerner, find yourself supplanted in the north and stuff. Do you kind of have to learn the characteristics because it's such a sort of culture change between where you were brought up? Or does that just, again, come with the geography switch across the country and world, in your case, with a short spell in Turkey as well?
I think it's a really good point. My dad's led a nomadic life, lived all over the UK, Europe and the world. He's ex-military, and I moved around quite a bit when I was younger. So diverse ranges throughout the UK we've lived within. And, you know, it's for me, like, each area that I've lived in, it's got its merits, as all places. But for me, I found a home in the Northwest. I truly have ended up building a home here in the Northwest, and built a family here as well. So for the foreseeable future, this is where I am calling home.
How strange was it to leave Rochdale after so long? And how do you go about assimilating into a new club? Is it very much on the merits of you as an individual having to go to the new squad you're going into and make those bridges? Or does a good club sort of pull in both directions and make you feel welcome?
It was difficult to leave. No two doubts about that. When you have like an association and an affinity with a club for such a period of time, and if I go back to what I said before, ships and a night, it's quite rare nowadays to see someone stay at a football club for such a prolonged period of time. And to leave, it wasn't just leaving a football club, it was leaving friends and a deep association with that club. But the new football club that I signed for, Salford, they opened their arms, they welcomed me in, and to be a part of a mission, a bigger picture, is exciting. And it's been a great move, something that's I've kind of really like grasped, because it's like you have to, how can I say it, show people what you can do. And I think it's gave me that extra boost or spark to, as a catalyst, then to go on to have scored the goals what I have done this season. So, you know, you can look at it two ways, of sadness or happiness. But I've mixed them both together as kind of a motivator.
I mean, it's a lovely compliment as well that such an illustrious ownership set would know all about you and have recruited you and brought you in. And then I guess a lovely challenge as well. Is it not nerve-wracking though to have sort of owners like that who've got that kind of pedigree?
Not for me personally, but I can see where you was looking at with the question. For me, at this stage in my career, to be a part of something where they're striving for the best that they possibly can be and where they want to take the football club, that in itself was an opportunity that I personally couldn't turn down. And it's exciting to be a part of it. And again, I'm appreciative to all of the owners of the football club for bringing me in, because the remit was pretty simple on the front end, is help us score goals to get promoted. So hopefully I'm repaying that early faith that they put in me.
Yeah. I mean, are they very hands-on and sort of pitching to you and involving you and telling you what the sort of story is and the long-term objectives is? Are they very much in and around all the time?
The initial couple of meetings, Gary was there, the previous manager was there, the sporting director was there, and they're all singing off the same hymn sheet of where they want to take the football club. I know Gary's got a huge involvement with the football club as well. Chris Casper, the sporting director, is overseeing all of the football project. So everyone's moving in the right direction together.
Yeah, you've got a trip to Wembley coming up next week as well. Now, this is the weirdest scenario imaginable, isn't it? You're going to play in a Wembley Cup final, the Papa John Trophy final, but it's the delayed one for last year. How many of the players that actually earned the trip to Wembley are still in the Salford City squad for the match against Portsmouth?
Mark, it probably would have only ever happened during what's going on right now. And again, I'm appreciative of all of the players that helped the football club get to this this position, this final. And you know, there's a few that are still here that enabled the club to position themselves at playing at the infamous, the famous Wembley. And I've done an interview where we were speaking about it, and it is a little bit strange to be representing the football club in a final that you've not had no part in. But again, it's all you can do is go with the cards that you've been dealt. You know, it is what it is. We have to stay flexible with all what's going on.
And as well, let's be frank, I bet you've had some moments in the past where things have not turned out as well, or moments have been taken away from you at short notice. So, hey, take it all you can. Elsewhere in Sky Bet League 2 over the past week, after three consecutive wins, Cheltenham Town have moved top for the first time this season. Six in a row for the first time since under Sam Allardyce in 2002 has taken Bolton Wanderers into the playoff places, and Bradford City's revival under joint managers Mark Truman and Connor Sellers continued with a 10th win in their 14th matches in charge. And in fact, Bradford and Bolton play each other this coming weekend. It's Cambridge against Walsall, Cheltenham against Port Vale, Forest Green travel to Grimsby, Morecambe against Carlisle, Tranmere, where Keith Hill is obviously the manager, are against Crawley. I mentioned that because Ian said that Keith Hill was still his mentor, and it's Salford at home to Scunthorpe. Have you surprised yourself with what you have achieved over the course of your career? And have there been moments where people have written you off, or you've wondered what the future held for you?
Another real good question.
I try my best, Ian, you know, I've been doing this now for nearly a quarter of a century. Can't you see the wrinkles and the sort of gnarly marks on my forehead? So occasionally, most of them are far too long. Most of them are completely irrelevant. Most of them are not what you're expecting, but occasionally a good one might land.
No, it's a perfect question, because from the outset, when you start off your career, your YTS, you have huge expectations, huge desires, goals, and as you progress through the hierarchical leagues as such, you kind of determine which level that you're going to play at. And I've spent the majority of my career playing at League One, which when I reflect back on it is probably a true reflection of where my level of ability is. And hugely happy with the career that I've had. And just to add, we all have doubts, we all have hesitations, we're all human. And yes, there's been trying times during this expansive career, let's say. Was it 19 years now? There's been lots of ups and downs, but I've had an unwavering belief in myself that has never left me. And that was within me as a kid, to always believe in myself and to do the best that I can do. And that's all what any of us are doing on this planet, is trying to do the best that we can do. And, you know, it's still stuck with me, and always having that like real, real hunger and burning desire to create and pave out a career in football.
I don't know how, but this is the first time I've ever interviewed you. I'm not sure we've even met before in the past, but the compliment I'll pay you is you're a tremendously likeable guy. How big a part has that played in your career, to be able to just have a likeable personality? How big an asset has that been for you across the course of your career? Or have you been a nasty, horrible piece of work in the past, and this is just a recent addition to your portfolio?
I've just been unapologetically myself my whole career. Sometimes that's worked out, sometimes it hasn't. But whether it's an alter ego when you go onto a football pitch and it's a facade, I go out there to try and do my best and score and put people under pressure and run as hard as I can and all what comes with these basic fundamentals we speak about football. But for anyone, it's like, you just have to be yourself. If people like you, they like you, great. If they don't, no problem at all. It's water off a duck's back. And you know, for me, it's probably like maybe the likability factor is I put the team before myself all of the time. And to be a part of a team is special in itself. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a nice compliment that you've given me there, Mark, and I truly appreciate it.
Well, listen, it has been such an enjoyable chat. I think I've sat here smiling throughout the entire thing. We wish you luck for the rest of the season. We wish you luck in your Wembley final, which you've had as a little bonus to your career added on. But we've already chatted about that. Thanks for joining us on the official EFL podcast.
Mark, absolute pleasure.
In the Sky Bet Championship, with 12 games to go, Norwich City have opened up a 10-point lead at the top after Emi Buendia's 10th goal of the season saw off second place Brentford. Six consecutive wins have taken Barnsley to just below the final playoff place. It's their best championship winning run since they were promoted in the 1996-97 season. And after five consecutive defeats, Rotherham United spoiled Darren Moore's first game in charge of relegation rival Sheffield Wednesday. Freddie Ladapo's winner at Hillsborough came in the 7th minute of added on time. Your fixtures this coming weekend: Friday night, Cardiff visit Huddersfield Town. Saturday lunchtime, it's Watford against Nottingham Forest. Barnsley, Birmingham, Brentford, Rotherham and Reading, Sheffield Wednesday. All 3 o'clock, all promotion contenders up against relegation contenders. It's also Norwich against Luton, Bournemouth visit Preston and Swansea entertain Middlesbrough. That's it for this episode. A big thank you to Ian Henderson and Michael Appleton. If you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and please share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks for listening. See you next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.